everybody. Welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we are back again for the most wonderful episode of the year, Corey. No, it's not our Christmas episode. No, it's not our Arbor Day episode. No, 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 ooh. Corey. It is a bump a da bump just imagine that there's some sort of clip in here, Corey, of some sort of a celebratory sound, because it is Game of the Year episode. The episode that everybody has been waiting for all year long, ever since our last episode in 2022, wherein Elden Ring took the collective win for Arcade Cozy's Game of the Year. Corey, I'm excited. This year has been such a wild year full of wild games, and I've never had a harder time putting together a top 10. I think in years past, it's usually like I don't have enough games, I feel like, to fill out a top 10. And this year, I have way too many games to round that out, and made it very hard to choose. So here we are.
Here we are. And I'm in a similar boat as you, in that I think I texted you yesterday or was the day before, like, I still don't know what my number 10 is. Newsflash, I have settled on my number 10. We will reach that shortly. But I think probably about a week ago, I had about four or five games jockeying for that last spot. And I narrowed it down and finally reached a winner, so to speak. But looking at 2023 as a whole in gaming is one of the, if not my personal opinion, best years that gaming has had, as from a release schedule. I think the industry as a whole has had much better years, but in terms of game releases, for me, there isn't a year that tops it, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of great years. I think years like, 07 is usually touted. Mm-hmm. That was the year that like Mass Effect came out, and Assassin's Creed came out, and Bioshock came out, and Call of Duty 4 came out, and Halo 3 came out. Like, you know, there's stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, in a long time, I would say probably the closest year that we've had has been maybe in my mind, maybe like 2017 would be.
That was Breath of the Wild, Mario Odyssey,
Persona 5 came out that year as well. I can't remember what else.
Is it Hollow Knight?
Hollow Knight? Maybe. I don't know. Hollow Knight's kind of weird because it was on PC for a little while and then kind of like re-hit later. But yeah, 2017, 2018, because 2018 was also God of War and Spider-Man and stuff.
Red Dead 2.
Yeah, that little window was pretty solid, but I don't know that haven't had a year like that since. So, Corey, for, you know, we have a lot of new listeners that join in on our Game of the Year episodes. People just kind of pop in just to hear what your fellas are liking. So for anybody joining us for the first time, first of all, hello. My name is Chris. This is Corey.
And yes, me. Hi.
This is Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet, where we talk about games, not necessarily always cozy games, but we try to do it in the coziest way possible by making it just a chill atmosphere. Sometimes there's little like tinkly music in the background if you join us for one of our little bonus episodes. Not today though. Today it's if it was a soundtrack, it would be Alan Wake's Heart of Darkness. Is that what it's called? I can't remember. Is that what the song
is it Champion of Darkness?
Herald of Darkness?
Herald of Darkness, yes.
Herald of Darkness, yeah.
Yeah, that would be playing on loop in the background.
It would be a prog rock anthem going hard all day. But yeah, Corey, without further... So the way that this works, for anybody who's never joined us in the past, Corey and I both have a top 10. We're going to go through... It's going to be a two-parter because this is beefy, which means this episode 6 through 10, baby. Next episode, 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. You also get some honorable mentions and everything on the back end, because we don't want to spoil anything as we work through this list. But yeah, it's highly scientific. We've crunched the numbers. This is objectively these are objectively the games of the order, despite Corey and I's lists being completely different, I'm sure. Don't read into that too much. Just know whenever I say it's number 10, that's number 10, but it's also number 10 when Corey says it's number 10. So I hope you, hope everybody can agree, and we can roll on through. Corey, let's start it off. Number 10, what you got? This has been your most contentious placements of the year. What ended up making it as your number 10?
So, again, to quickly follow up on that, this is our top 10. These are our celebrations of our top 10s and like what has spoken and meant the most to us. And also, I think, but also quality wise, at times will push its way into the list too. Without further ado, so I had a very difficult time settling on my number 10, and how I chose to settle on it was last night. I had it narrowed down between two games. I'm like, which of these do I want to continue playing going forward? I still want to finish the other one. It'll come up in the honorable mentions. But it was like, okay, going into 2024, my current gaming habit is I'm playing so many games right now. What is something I still want to keep in the rotation? What is something I want more of and to see more of? And that game, my number 10 game for 2023, happens to be, well, we should just go ahead and dive right in, I guess, with Dave the Diver.
What?
Wrapping in, our very nautical boy, Dave, who is a diver.
We'll just keep it going for a little while.
Yeah, for real.
Oh, no. It won't stop, Corey. Corey, it won't stop. I can't stop it.
You can stop it. I believe in you.
There we go.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, beautiful. I wanted a little bit of a clap, but then that went on for a very long time and it wouldn't stop. So,
hey, Dave deserves it.
Yes,
Dave absolutely deserves it.
Yeah,
it was a listener submitted us to check it out, and I have been playing it ever since then. I don't play it in significant chunks, but when I do play it, it is a magical experience. So for those who don't know what David the Diver is and haven't checked it out this year, do not be fooled. It is not an indie game. It is a game with a pretty fairly sized production with a small team at a bigger studio. I can't remember the studio off the top of my head. I'm trusting Chris to pull it up while I continue to talk about this. But David the Diver is effectively a, in my opinion, cozy diving game / restaurant manager, where you play as the titular Dave the Diver. You spend a lot of time in this blue lagoon catching all the fish with harpoons. You do have to occasionally shoot them with guns, which I don't love. I understand the mechanic of it. But just the simple idea of developing your own menu for the restaurant by catching different fish in this lagoon and different types of like jellyfish, getting clams, weird eels, so on and so forth, and creating this very diversified menu, because as you catch these fish, you take them to the restaurant, and then you have a chef who creates these sushi rolls as you have customers coming in, and it's kind of a time management mini game of like, okay, can I pour this green tea in time and still serve this person their plate of spicy tuna before they get impatient and leave? And oh, and the wasabi's down, so now I need to clean off the wasabi or create more wasabi on the wasabi board. Oh, nope, there's a dish I need to clean up as well, so there's more room for people to sit, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful and compelling mix of these two different I would say almost genres within a game that I would say Day of the Doctor is actually filled with several different styles of mini games just kind of throughout it. But overall, these two core ones blend seamlessly together. I think it's a beautiful, wonderful time. And I keep finding myself wanting to go back to it just to play a bit more, just to discover what else is there to see in this lagoon. And there's also story to it as well. There's like sea people, a giant octopus. You're getting these fun gadgets as well. There's different ways to go about your dives. Some dives are like more material based, some are more fish based, some are going to be more story based. It depends on how you want to do it. There's night dives, which are very fun. But again, and to kind of wrap up Dave the Diver here, I just want to play more at the end. At the end of the night, like last night, it was between this and I'll go ahead and spoil what it beat out to just give it a little bit of its dues. It beat out Super Mario Wonder, which I think is a wonderful game and a game I want to finish, but I feel like I've seen it all, if that makes sense. I'm through four of the six main worlds, not counting the secret worlds. And while I want to finish the game, I don't feel like there's anything else that's going to wow me or capture my attention. The only thing that's pulling me back with that game is its mechanics. While Dave the Diver, I feel like there's just so much I haven't seen, so much unexplored, so much more story to see, and so much more I can do with the sushi restaurant that I personally just like, I need more of it. And I'm going to keep playing it, and I intend to, and that's why Dave the Diver comes in at number 10 for me. It is just a very cozy and warm experience.
Love it. Yeah, I still would like to play it. It came out on Switch very recently. It's been, what was the release on it? Windows end of June, Switch end of October. So it had it's come out, you know, it's had a little bit of time, but as we know, there's been a lot of other stuff. So I just haven't made it around to it, but the game has received so much acclaim. A lot of people love it. And I would like to play it early next year. Just didn't manage. Developer, by the way, Mint Rocket, which is a sub brand of Nexon. Is a South Korean developer who what I know them best for is Maple Story. I played a good bit of Maple Story whenever I was in middle school, high school. So I am familiar with them for that. If their sub brand is making stuff like Dave the Diver, let them keep doing it. Am I right?
I agree. I don't have anything else to say. I want to leave it at that. I did play it on Steam Deck actually, so I guess I have a little bit more to say. Runs great there. Absolutely incredible. I know it's on Switch. I don't think it's on anything else yet. But it's been wonderful for me on the deck.
Love it. Sweet. Corey.
Yeah, man.
Would you like to name my number 10? I'm a little, I would like to try a drum roll thing, but I'm also not sure that it's going to stop. So I won't.
Fair. I am very interested. I think, a little prediction time before we get farther. I think we have the same, my prediction is we have the same top three in probably a different order, but from 4 to 10, I got no idea what you're about to bring. I have zero clue. And I'm really excited for it. So
I'm going to hit you with a curveball because this one was not on my list. It was high up in the honorable mentions, but did not actually crack my top 10 until the last couple of days. And then I realized in going back and like replaying a few things, I realized just how like good of an experience it is. My number 10 is Street Fighter 6, Corey.
Oh, yeah. Out of left field. Absolutely out of left field.
Yeah. People might remember I got Street Fighter 6 whenever it released in June. Played it a good bit and was really just super into it. The main reasons being I didn't play Street Fighter 5. Like, 5 came out. A lot of people poo-pooed it because of the way that it was kind of releasing. And once it had been out for a while, people felt a lot better about it, but it had a long history and a long time of getting there. Street Fighter 6 was it released and was just solid out of the gate. And they had their big, you might remember the world tour mode where it's this big, you create your avatar, you go around. Mm-hmm. You might also remember, I called it the dumbest fucking thing I've ever played in my life, but I also love it. it legitimately was one of these things where it's like, it is your, you know, upside down hurricane kicking across alleyways to go open a box that's beautiful. Up on some sort, you know, I mean, it's a weird experience, but there's that. There's also, you know, a really solid, just traditional versus structure. They have a robust training section where they have these character guides and they have these fundamentals where you can learn strategies for each of these characters, which can be is super helpful, especially for somebody like me who grew up playing Street Fighter, but was very afraid of playing some of these more complex characters. Cause how do you even wrap your head around trying to understand how you approach a fight as one of these characters. Having all of those different methods to onboarding you, on top of the fact that they developed this modern control scheme, which I think was one of the biggest things that they were kind of hyped up for, was, if you remember, Street Fighter and in a lot of traditional fighting games, they have the whole six button layout where it's high punch and low punch and, you know, high kick and low kick and medium lows and heavies and all this kind of stuff. And with this, it was they streamlined it to where it was a modern control scheme that felt almost kind of a little akin to Smash Brothers, where it was you have a special button, and if you press over in the special button, it does this thing. And if you do just stand there and press the special button, it does this other thing. And it was just this really, you know, robust reworking to make it to where you could, rather than having to worry about all these complex button inputs, you could just worry about playing the game. You're still having to pull off these moves and combos and stuff, but it's you don't have to worry about, okay, I need to remember all of these things. I can focus on the game more. And so I played Street Fighter 6 whenever it initially came out. I actually played it a good few weeks, really up until Final Fantasy 16 came out. And then, obviously that whole trajectory of just moving down and playing all of those other games. I wanted to pick it back up again because I remember Street Fighter VI being so good. And I just want to give it, another shot, and was almost kind of scared to, cause it was how am I going to hop back in? I barely kind of grasped some of these characters, whenever it first came out and I was actually devoting time, how am I going to do it? And it was it was such a smooth process getting back in and just playing the game. I got back in, got my booty stomped a couple of times, but went through a little bit of training, kind of brushed up on some of the basics and got back in and was able to competitively play against some harder computers and some other players and stuff, and just got back in and I was this is such a smooth, pure experience. And even though I'm not the legitimately, if I was a diehard fighting game, this would probably be top 5, top 3. Street Fighter 6 is just that good. But I think the only thing that makes it toward the bottom of my list is largely just because I'm not that person, but it was a thing playing it the last couple of days. Cause I put in a little bit of time over the last few days. Like it's, I'm like, man, I'm reminded how just tuned and perfect this experience is. And it makes me really excited to see, like, if they're able to, you know, Street Fighter V was able to become a legitimately good game after starting off not great. You know, I'm really interested to see, like, what they continue to make out of it. Like, what Street Fighter VI continues to be over the next, you know, 5 years that it's this thing. So, yeah, super great. Street Fighter VI coming out of left field, underdog. What's in like tournament terms? It's one of the
Tom Bomb scams.
Yeah. It's right there. Who knew? It's a wild ride going from here, Corey, up to the top of the list. So get ready for it.
I believe it. And I love that Street Fighter 6 Major 10. I see it on sale because it's on sale now. I think on PlayStation and Deck or Steam. Sorry. Uh-huh. It's sitting at like $40. So it's around $30 off. And I've had my finger on the trigger for quite a while now. And I think you might have pushed me over the edge because I desperately want to like fighting games. I am just often very bad at them. And so I'm very excited to potentially and hopefully jump in. So,
yeah. And yeah. I think it's one of the like biggest positives of the last couple of years with some fighting games, because Dragon Ball FighterZ also had this a little bit. And I know there have been some others, but they are starting to try to make the genre more accessible. Yeah. Because I mean, that's part of why Smash is so popular, is that the barrier to entry is very low, even though the skill ceiling is incredibly high. And so I think there's a lot of recognition around that of people being like, let's open the doors up. And I think these games are a lot better for it because, you know, they are really cool and there's a lot of like really neat stuff you can get from it. You just have to kind of get over that hump right from the beginning. So
yeah, and like I said, I hope I get to do that very soon. I'll keep everyone updated. Well, wonderful. I guess we'll move on to my number nine.
Yeah.
Number nine. And so from here on, I would say my order changed a fair bit. But the next nine, this isn't not to date the diver up by any means, but the next nine have been pretty set for a while, and it was just more their order than anything. But so, without further ado, number nine for me is Jusson. Jusson is I would attest to it being a cozy climbing game. Mm. It is a post apocalypse. It has picked up after Jusson, which is the receding tide in French, is the meaning behind it, where you play as an unnamed protagonist, and you climb the biggest freaking tower you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And the game takes place across about six different chapters, where you just Death Stranding-esque L2 R2 to use your left arm and right arm. You mm-hmm. climb your way up this effing mountain. There's more to it than that. Along the way, you come across a lot of what's been left behind by the people who used to live here. And you can kind of see where things have gone wrong. The water recedes, and you can see where clearly it was water level at one point, because all these boats are here, all these docks are hanging off the side of off of the mountain. You can see out in the distance ships are beached effectively, and you're just getting more notes of like, hey, I've lived here, and man, it really sucks that like the water is going away. And as you work your way up the mountain, it slowly devolves, and it really sucks that the water is going away. What do we do? Yeah. And so on and so forth. You kind of see how the apocalypse happened and like how people's lives were affected. And even further up you go, you can see where people have left the tower in search of water because they're running out. And you can read letters of those who are deciding to leave, and they're leaving a note for their loved ones. You can read notes for those who have decided to stay and see out the remainder of their time there as well. And it's just a beautiful, what's the right word? Just, I feel like, very carefully told story about like this is a possibility. Without getting into some of the more, because it dives into some supernatural elements that I don't know if they super work, but I still really like them compared to the message that I feel like the game's trying to tell about climate change and how we need to better care for the resources that we have in today's world. But I think overall, like, it drives that message home as you work your way up, and you do have these moments of this, I would say, what is in place for human ingenuity and spirit, they have placed in this almost like mythical, like magical, like these creatures helps you along your way, helps some of the plants regrow, kind of like gives you different ways to climb up this mountain other than a simple L2, R2 using handholds. It's, there's these vines up the side that's dried up because of the sun, this little sidekick character that I don't think ever has a name either, can effectively like help regrow the world. And it's a little activation button, I believe it's like R3 or L3. And all of a sudden, the plants will grow, and these are new handholds for you to climb up the mountain. And I think just everything about it really spoke to me as just like a bleak vision or like version of our future if like we don't get it right. And I think it shows how perseverance, how strength, and like the ingenuity to overcome different obstacles as the game consistently tries to make it difficult for you to climb up this mountain, how all of that can go into like fixing, saving the planet and the world. And overall, I loved it. I think it does the climbing aspect of it, to go from story to gameplay, the climbing aspect of it, they nail. It feels so good to work your way up these walls and to climb up these plants and vines and even use these bugs as like a riding mechanic up a wall as you're like slowly like climbing up those as well. I think the pit? Are they called pits or pints? Not pints. But the save points that they effectively use as you can work your way. While you're climbing up, I think is extremely smart. Also, just like, I'm thankful that I don't have to fall like 60 feet. I can just fall 10 feet. I just loved it. I think everyone should play it. And I mean that genuinely. It's a short game. It's only like 4 hours at most, I would say, across 6 chapters. And I think it has a spectacular ending. And it's really just stuck with me. Since I finished it, probably, what was it, 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago now? Mm-hmm. We talked about it earlier this year. But I just think it's a must play game. And it's very special. And yeah.
Yeah. We talked about it pretty recently because I think it just came out like in October-ish.
Okay.
It is very much, if you didn't hear those episodes where we talked about it, where Corey played it and I played it a little bit afterwards, like it feels a lot like kind of the closest thing to Journey that we've gotten a long time. Like, no dialogue, just very like emotional sweeping score, which also the score is fantastic too.
Spectacular.
Just really great world building. Doesn't overstay its welcome. Just a nice short game that does climbing probably better than any other game that's ever come out, I would say.
Yeah.
super good, super cool too, Corey. Yeah, love that it's there. And also, I assume it's still on Game Pass. So if you have Game Pass, you can, you can go and play it, for the cost of Game Pass. Which if you're already paying for Game Pass is free, quote unquote.
Yeah. I think it's on everything right now. I've seen it on PlayStation. It wasn't an Xbox exclusive, but it is on Game Pass. I think it's on Steam Deck. I don't know about Switch.
It does not look like it's on Switch. So,
which I think it
consoles will, and PC.
It should eventually move its way. It's not very beefy graphically, by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. Not a knock to it. That's not what it's going for either. But I wouldn't be surprised if it makes its way to Switch. It feels like a title that should be on the Nintendo Switch, in my opinion. But
yeah, it might. I don't really know, though, because I know that it was an Unreal 5 game, so I don't really, even though they stylized it a lot and it's not like super realistic graphics, I don't know how intensive Unreal 5 is on like a Switch hardware. So
fair. Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe the Switch 2.
Maybe comes
out next year.
Yes. Next year.
Corey, my number 9 is not Jusson. Oh. My number 9 is Octopath Traveler Dose.
Personally had this a lot higher I thought it was gonna be like number 4 for you, honestly.
No, I mean, I think so that's the thing, is like Octopath, I mean, partially like I have to give Octopath its due, just because like when it comes to like retro style JRPGs, I feel like the Octopath games are like very high up, like some of the top tier things out there, because they are doing, you know, that old school combat like is refined to a point. Like a lot of the storytelling is really compelling, really interesting. The art's beautiful, the music's beautiful. But I mean, I think like Octopath 2, I think it's partially because of when it came out and also just this year. But like, even though I never fell off of Octopath 2, like I still have not played it all the way through, just because like I would play it and then I would get pulled to something else, and I would play it and I would get pulled to something else. And it always felt like kind of a casualty of the new releases. And I think part of it is the fact that it's like, it always feels like a game that you can put down and come back to, in the same style as, you know, I feel like old school Final Fantasy games and things like that are. But I think partially like it is even though it is a more refined Octopath Traveler, like it still is Octopath Traveler, and it still has, some of the like downsides to Octopath Traveler, namely the fact that there is a lot of freedom in who you recruit and when you recruit them. So it means that the core narrative is a little disjointed whenever it comes to like the characters interacting with each other. I will say like Octopath 2 does a little bit better at that. They do kind of like pull in those characters a little bit more. They do also have these kind of like, I can't remember what they're called, but they're these like kind of pairing sub-stories where two of the characters have their own little thing. And so like they have their own little arc where they're going off over here and having this little, you know, even though it's kind of a small thing, they have their own little quest that they are working on together. And so Octopath 2 very much is like a refined version of that. But yeah, I mean, I think very potentially, like had I made it all the way through the game, because I mean, even at this point, like I'm probably 40, 45 hours into it. Like I've played a lot of it, but I'm not through it. And had I made it to the end, like it's possible, the ending blew me away, or the end game, or, you know, whatever. Like there was this huge thing that would have just catapulted it up the list. But No, it ended up a little bit lower just because there was a lot of cool stuff, and Octopath felt like just a, you know, cozy comfort JRPG throughout the year, where it wasn't like blowing me away in any capacity, but it was just always good. And I think I think for no other reason, it's still gonna make the list because it's one of the best JRPG styling things that came out this year, regardless. So
no, and I agree with a lot of what you said there. And I don't know, for some reason, I just thought, yeah, I'm second guessing a lot of where I think I have your choices right now. Because in my brain, a game like Octopath is just so much like year-ish that I think I just hyped and it made your list. We're not digging it right now. But yeah, I don't know. Now I'm just second guessing where I think everything is. And so interesting.
I gotta zag, Corey.
You're keeping me on my toes right now.
Yeah, I got to. Last year was too easy for you, Corey.
Last year we had a lot of lineup. I don't think we're gonna have anything that matches until 3-1. And I don't know if any of those match. I just think those will be similar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love it.
Good to know.
Corey.
Love it.
Yeah. Number 8. What you got?
Number 8. And so this might come as a surprise for you and most of our listeners, because I only recently just played it and beaten it. But we're sticking with cozy games, and we're jumping back to the nautical theme. And we're just adding some eldritch horror to it. And that is because Dredge slides in at number 8.
Look at Dredge.
It dredged its way in. What can I say? That was bad. Don't laugh at that.
No, I loved it. I need an applause for that one.
Fair. Okay. Yeah, hype me up. So Dredge, it's been a game that you talked about early on this year because it came out so much earlier this year. And I've seen a lot of people talk about it. It's been on my list. I think I bought it in like July. And just hadn't touched it. It's always been in the back of my mind, like, I should check Dredge out. I should check it out. And I just never did up until like 3 weeks ago, was it? Maybe it was at the beginning of the month. And at first, I was a little unsure about it, not due to its eldritch spooky nature, but just due to its initial. How I felt like the gameplay loop works. And so, for those who don't know, Dredge opens up with you having like your fishing boat crash, you get a new fishing boat, and you're kind of given these like odd warnings on this day-night cycle of like, hey, it gets really, really, really weird at night. You shouldn't go out at night. You're like, okay, good to know. And so you go out the day, and they're telling you, hey, you need to catch fish for the town here, so you can feed them. That's not like a huge like mechanic of like having to feed towns, but they initially imply that it is.
Yeah.
And so I go out to the bay, I catch a couple of fish, and look up, and the sun is setting. I'm like, I have been fishing for like a minute and a half. Maybe not even a minute and a half. And I have to go back. And that initial bit, I would say, of like your first like 4 or 5 days, in-game days of playing the game, I was not super sold on it because I'm just like, I'm getting out there, I'm catching a couple of fish that I'm getting no money on. This kind of sucks. But quite quickly, I will say, the game introduces a lot of mechanics to you and very much encourages you to explore quite quickly as well. And it just opened up in a way I was not expecting. It moved to, I'm kind of stuck in Great and Little Marrow. And there's a Blackstone Island, and then there's this weird guy over there. He wants me to find him some stuff. Okay, I'll start looking for stuff. And as you begin to explore the different archipelagos, I would say, and different islands that exist around the center bit, I fell in love with what the game was doing. this like very quick cycle of like, okay, let me, I'm working on a time frame right now. I can't stay out at night. Just some weird things are going to happen to my guy if I stay out at night. You get a little paranoid, the game, and just start seeing shadows different places. You'll get these notifications that something has slipped onto your ship. The game will start to play tricks on you to where you see different like rocks and like things that aren't there in the water start appearing, so on and so forth. And so there are some consequences to stay on at night. But there's also some like massive rewards that you learn of where like the bigger fish that you can sell for more money are often out at night. And just slowly but surely, you begin to upgrade your ship. You begin to start experiencing these different stories around these islands. You begin to catch even bigger fish. You're expanding your inventory. You're getting like these nets you can like hang off the back of your ship. So when you're like driving around, you're just catching fish. You're reading books. You don't actually read any books. Your character just like gets percentage on it, but based on the books he's reading, you get different like passive stats are added on to it. And over time, you just become like this fishing monster to where you are like wrangling up like marlin and tossing them onto your boat with like octopus and other fish and these weird eels. And I'm going to the market. I'm like, give me all your money for it. And he's like, yes, sir. I'm going to take that and I'm going to put on this giant headlight. Now I can see at night even better. And I now have a faster ship, bigger engines. Now, like these weird monsters, because there are some giant monsters in the game, can't hunt me down anymore because I'm faster than them. They can eat it. And overall, as much as I think getting into like a hype fest for the game, it is just a very cozy, albeit a little spooky, fishing simulator. And I think they absolutely knock it out of the park with this game. I've bought the DLC, haven't played it yet. I fully intend to play it. I'm probably going to play it very soon, actually. And I love it. I want them to keep adding more to this game. There's only 5 main areas. And I could see them either one making a Dredge 2 or really just like, hey, we're going to keep just adding on different parts to this game. Because you can make it, quite frankly, as big as you want, and I'm here to eat it all up. Yeah. I know you had some issues regarding like where some of the main story goes. I personally really liked it. I kind of like this eldritch unknown, like just like out of like eyesight, but you know something is wrong and something's there. I appreciate that. When I first beat it, I got quote-unquote the bad ending. And then I went and got the good ending. And they're very similar. Both are, I think you coined it, both are kind of bad endings. And I would agree with that. But there is a better ending. I did note that the endings take place like 1 minute apart, which I thought was extreme, like within the end game time. And I thought that was a good nod to if you had been picking up, which I don't know if you had, and I don't want to spoil it, but like you find like these messaging bottles around the world, kind of giving you like the story of what's happened if you're paying attention. And then there's a nod to like there something weird happened at this time. It wasn't quite yesterday and it wasn't quite today. And I think that like the good ending happens at that quote unquote time. And I like saw that. I'm like, oh, it's happening kind of a thing. And I thought that was just like great for people who've been exploring and like trying to find everything. Dredge is just so good. It's so, so good. I played it on PS5. It's on Steam Deck. And I honestly want to buy it on Steam Deck just to play through it again. I know I could start a new save. I know it could. And it feels like a game that'd be great handheld, personally. And I mean, it's just so good. It's where for 2023 to have two amazing nautical games of Dave the Diver and Dredge, who have now collabed, which I haven't gotten to that the collab yet for Dave the Diver and dredge it. I think it's in the next chapter. I looked it up ahead of time of when it comes in into Dave the Diver. I'm just not quite there in the story yet. But it's just an outstanding achievement. I want to see more of it. And I'm excited to see what they keep doing with it. But that's my number eight. That is Dredge. And I encourage everyone who has not, I will encourage everyone to play every game we talk about right now. But yeah, if it's on your backlog, like it was on mine, it's weird to say it's on your backlog when it came out this year, but you get the point. If it's there,
if it exists, it's on my backlog.
Yeah, you should dredge it up and you should play it. It's pretty short. Maybe 8 hours.
It's probably longer than you would think, but it's not long.
No, you can kind of mainline a lot of things. It gets grindy isn't the right word because it never felt grindy for me, but I guess, you know, that's like the hallmark of when you really love a game, because you do have to fish a lot in certain points just to like build up enough gold to then get like the right equipment. You do kind of get a little locked out. But overall, I think it's progression of like how it introduces new mechanics based on like your commitment to fishing and selling. The game's core mechanic works really well. It is very... It feels on how it introduces all the mechanics, probably one of the better games of like, here's how you do this, this, and this. Now we're going to bring this in. Now we're going to bring this in. It never felt overwhelming to me. It all felt very straightforward. It all felt very just well put together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can gush about Dredge for forever. We have more games to talk about, but Dredge is spectacular. Dredge.
I loved Dredge. I think the thing that kind of like, I did get a little soured on it whenever I got to the end, just because like, you know, I think it's one of the things with games of that type, like the cozy games where you are kind of like resource and inventory managing is like in the beginning, it feels there's such a pressure to it. Like you really do have to go through and you're like, man, I gotta eke everything out. I gotta get like these biggest catches and I gotta make everything fit. And it does kind of feel like as you're getting toward the end, most of that is kind of going away because it's like you have the upgrades that you need and you're not having to like fish from, it's just kind of like that you're kind of streamlining the move toward the greater story, which is part of the narrative. I mean, that's kind of part of the thing. You're kind of, you know, starting to get embroiled in what is the larger conflict here. And then the ending, you know, for me, not to spoil anything, but was kind of like, even though I did get the good ending and had a lot of the, like, the context throughout from some of the hidden collectibles, it's still like, I think the pacing of it just being so abrupt was a little like jarring. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a thing where I got to the end and I was like, man, I feel like there should have been more. I feel like it shouldn't have been like that quick of just a turnaround. It felt a little like, felt a little rough in that regard, but like, no, I mean, Dredge in general, like just, I mean, everything to the, I think one of the biggest things that was super cool about it was the way that like your quote unquote fear, like actively would change reality. Like it being this thing, like, cause I mean, you could very well like picture if you are incredibly scared, cause I mean, in the game, like, you know, the more fearful you were, the more like you would be boating around and all of a sudden a rock would pop up out of nowhere. And like, you know, it would, you know, you could in your head be like, ah, that's a load of crap. And then it's like, but I mean, whenever you're scared, isn't there stuff like, doesn't your mind play tricks on you? Stuff just kind of like, you know, seem like it's there one second and that, you know, not there then, you know, stuff like that. Like they do a really good job at playing into that level of fear and really like leaning into the unknown nature of sea travel and just the ocean in general. And I think was phenomenal. I would love to play the DLC. Would love to play the game again, just in general. Super excited that you made it around to it, and that you were able to play it, because that is a dope number 8, my guy.
It's phenomenal.
Love it. Corey, my number 8, also not Dredge. Would you like to guess what it is, since you're wrong so far? Maybe
I've been very, very wrong so far. Number 8 for you. Let me look at my list. And then let me think about you in your list and what we have played. I'm going to guess Chance of Sinnar.
Not Chance of Sinnar, Corey. Okay. It's the other Chance of Sinnar. I don't really know what that means. Resident Evil 4 remake.
Oh, that's not the other Chance of Sinnar. It doesn't work.
Resident Evil 4 remake.
Okay.
Which was honestly like, it was a surprising thing, because when Resident Evil 4 Remake was announced, when it came out, like, I could not have given two poops about Resident Evil 4 Remake, because, like, I played Resident Evil 4, and granted, like, much later, like, I played it a few years ago for the first time, and it was just like, it was like, this is, I do not see what the hype was. And part of that's just, I mean, it's a 20-year-old game that you're playing for the first time, and this, you know, and it's like some people consider one of the best games of all time. Like, that's a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
But I think whenever Remake came out, like, I was in that Resident Evil mode. Like, I had played Resident Evil 2 Remake, I think, just before it. And then Resident Evil 4, like, that kind of got me in that mode and some of that hype level up. But then it also led into me playing some more Resident Evil games. And I think I think the biggest accomplishment for me for Resident Evil 4 Remake was the fact that I think it allowed me to see what was good about Resident Evil 4. Like, I think it's a, you know, for people who haven't played it, it does change a few things throughout. Like, I mean, the core arc is the same, but there are a few like beats that are slightly different. This character shows up at a different time, whatever. And they also go through and they streamline just some of the, you know, like, there are fewer, you know, Ashley, her character is less annoying, and, you know, Luis is not like sexualizing her as much as he did. Like, you know, there's stuff like that. Like, they're kind of like softening the edges on it. But it was a thing where whenever I was playing it, I was like, okay, now I feel like I get what people like so much about Resident Evil 4. Like, I feel like having some of that, like, having that streamlined kind of like push forward with, graphics help, but just the quality of life, making it play better, making it more fluid, making it like really streamlining the characters to be a little bit less campy and make it more of like a bigger, epic somewhat experience. I played through it and was like, man, I really enjoyed that. Like, I could see, you know, if this was the experience that somebody was having, like, quote unquote, with, or, you know, just back 20 years ago, like, this is what they were in their mind kind of playing. It's like, I get why people would be like, this is the best game I've ever played. Because it is such a, it takes you on a roller coaster of all of these things that are happening. It has a really strong cast of characters. Leon, especially if you play in comparison to like Resident Evil 2, where Leon is like, it's his first day on the job. He's going to the police station. He's a goody two shoes. Like, he's really buttoned up. He wants to do everything right. And then you come into Resident Evil 4 and he's so like this, it's like 10 years later and he's like doing backflips and he's, you know, knife fighting with people and stuff. And like, he's just seen it. Like, and he's using his humor as a coping mechanism to just be like, there's a lot of stuff and I'm just trying to make it. Like, there is such a good and clear arc all the way through his whole story. And I think, like, seeing it just refined, seeing the game, like, having a purer, better version of that, that really does kind of embrace some of the modernity and, you know, take away some of the rougher stuff, I think makes it, in my mind, a much better experience. And it wowed me enough for it to be my number 8, because it was like, I more than anything was just surprised that I liked it as much as I did. And I was just like, this is a great game. Like, full stop, either way. I see what people like about Resident Evil 4 now, which is a miracle in and of itself, apparently.
Wow. Okay. I did not anticipate RE4 remake. Quite honestly, being that
on my
low.
List.
No, just that low.
Okay.
Yeah. You are surprising me, Chris. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Games are hitting different this year, Corey.
Games are hitting different this year. And so to follow that up with a bit of a surprise, because I could have easily talked about it earlier when you talked about it.
Street Fighter
but for
6.
Sorry. That's dismissive of Street Fighter 6. I did not mean for it to be. You loved it. I love that you loved it. But no, Octopath Traveler 2.
Very nice.
Comes in at number 7 for me. These flip-flopped right before we started recording. I was looking at my list. I'm like, that shouldn't be there. This and Dredge did. And so for Octopath Traveler 2, just to, I guess, continue our little discussion and why it might be a little bit higher for me. So this year, I would say there was like 3 titular GRPGs in this style. Mm-hmm. We had Chained Echoes, which didn't come out this year, but it came out very, very late last year, and I beat it this year.
Yeah.
There was Sea of Stars, which did not make my list. Spoilers, I guess.
Oh, no.
And
number 1. How could you?
Oh, oops. Sorry. But Octopath Traveler 2 came, and I think with those 3, I think for a long time I thought Sea of Stars would be the one for me. And looking at narrative for all 3 of them, not great. A little to the point, even like talking to Octopath 2, it's not the best. But what has continuously, like you, I'll play it, fall off for another game, keep playing it, fall off, you know, but I keep coming back. Is the big thing. I keep wanting to play it, and not really for the story. I think the characters are good. I've made it much farther. I'm about, not farther than you, about 35 hours in, but I've made it farther here than I did in the original Octopath.
Because
I do think the characters are better. I think their stories are very cookie cutter. Is putting it, I think, in the best way. There's not a lot to them other than maybe, I think Timonos is pretty interesting. As kind of like this, like, he's an inquisitor, but for like the church, and he often like questions his own religion. He's like, I don't know. A lot of this isn't great, for being honest. And that might just resonate with me in my personal spot in life.
You are right though. And we brought this up at a couple of different points, but I think one of the like big things that Octopath Traveler 2 does, I think, better than the first one is that it does mix up those archetypes a lot more. Whereas, you know, the cleric in the original game was just kind of more of a traditional, like, very devout cleric who's going up against evil. And in this, Timnos, like, is doing that, but he's also questioning his, like, there are a lot more internal struggles that are happening. And I think the characterization is a lot, you know, is also very interesting. Particio, the merchant, also has a really cool
incredible
story.
And I just think Particio is absolutely stunning. He gives me massive Pedro Pascal vibes, even though That's who I imagine if Octopath 2 was ever made into a television series. Not that it ever will be.
Yeah, it should, though.
It should be, and Pedro Pascal should play Particio. But
I could see that.
To get more into, I guess, why it's so high for me, I think the cast of characters is phenomenal. I think their core motivations are so much clearer and have so much, I think, more stakes behind them too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they just absolutely nailed like three things. Soundtrack, I think it might be one of the best soundtracks this year of any game. It's like consistent ambient music is just soothing, stunning. The battle themes, everything is just a 10 out of 10. I need them to release it so I can, because I listen to the Octopath 1 soundtrack even now while I'm working because it's just so relaxing, personally speaking. So I need the second one to come. I think two, like this day and night cycle, how they nailed the different class actions that get to work in the world. And so for those who haven't played Octopath or Octopath 2, it is a like 16-bit JRPG turn-based combat, a la like an old school Final Fantasy is really what it is. Where different characters have different jobs, like thief, warrior, mage, cleric, so on and so forth. But I can't speak to what the old school Final Fantasies or even the old school Dragon Quest did, where this game derives a lot of its, I guess, like inspiration from. But these classes have these core mechanics that work in the world. And so for someone like, for like the thief class, you get to like pickpocket people, and that is how I quite frankly make all of my money and find all my items. You are just like absolutely robbing people blind, and you can rob effectively everyone in the world blind as well. For the warrior class, Hikari, he can like learn new moves by talking to different characters. And so on and so forth. Like each of these classes like can interact with the world, and on a day and night cycle, those different things change as well. And so it's, I think, just that extra layer of mechanics, that extra little bit of having to think ahead on how you want to interact with the world based on just like day or night and like the different abilities you have, is a giant upgrade. And something that they nailed in the first game that they absolutely knocked out of the park in this one is just the combat. I think why I've moved past the idea with these JRPGs and their stories of not being like the best is so much that I think the combat mechanics are just apps, and that's what the game is about, is the combat mechanics, but just are stunning. I love fighting in this game, where they've tweaked it enough from 1 to 2, because 1 felt incredibly grindy, and to speak to, I guess, how Judge before, when things get grindy and you feel it get grindy, that's not really fun. But in Octopath 2, I guess they gave you just enough bit more experience to where I'm like, I shouldn't fast travel between these two spots in the world. I should just run in between, because I should level up enough in between for the new party members I brought in to be in level line with this story. And like having that is a massive thing that I think more games need to get right, is that, okay, your requirement to be here is level 22. Well, I have a couple characters at level 22. But this character hasn't. They're like level like 18. But to travel from there to there is a good ways, and I'm choosing to travel there. You can choose the story in any order you want, but like going there, and I know I should level up at least 2 times. In games that understand like how these maps are, because the game levels up with you, it adjusts its levels based on where you're at. And for games to like really like, okay, yeah, leveling up isn't going to take you hours. It's going to take a little bit extra of your time, but being able to like do 5 to 8 fights, maybe a bit more, I might be underselling that, but not much more in between like these two areas to get 2 levels is just, I love it. I love not having to grind. I love always just being right there. I never feel too much stronger than where the game wants me to be at compared to its difficulty. And I, with this style of game, that is a meaty JRPG with lots of mechanics, lots of skills, lots of classes or jobs, different secondary jobs, focusing on equipment, your armor, all these random things going on in your passive stats. All this works so well together. I don't know if they can make a better one of these other than like really like nailing the story.
Yeah.
But at this point, I don't know if I'm here for the story of Octopath anymore. I think they're good. I think they're a means to an end to show off the mechanics more than anything. Mm-hmm. And all that is just, I think, so well done that I want to keep playing more. And I want to beat this game, Chris. This, we talked about it earlier. Or you talked about it, how like you don't know if you will. I want to beat Octopath.
Oh, no, I know that, I will. It's okay. Just, it's been I definitely want to as well. It's just, you know, it's a matter of when at this point, Corey. Not if. But when, it might be years from now. Who knows?
Who knows when. But I want to see this to the end because I just think it's so good. I think everything they're doing is so good. And I'm not here to see, like, the end to all the stories. I'm here to see, like, okay, what's going to be when we're level like 80 something, and I am just absolutely like I have to nail this fight. We got to get it right. And yeah, Octopath Traveler 2, number 7 this year. I wouldn't say look forward to hearing more about it on the show. I'm sure I'll bring it up. On like later episodes that we're doing, later podcasts, but I probably, as I make it near the end, it might come back up, but it's just something I'm probably going to play in the background for quite some time, truly.
Yeah. There are also a lot of JRPGs coming out this year, Corey. A lot of stuff to talk about. But yeah, maybe we'll do an Octopath spoiler cast, you know, after our Final Fantasy 16 spoiler cast and our Elden Ring spoiler cast.
I'm into that.
Yeah. It'll be right there.
Yeah. I'm into that.
All right. Love it, Corey. My number 7. You mentioned it before, Corey. I'll mention it now. Chance of Sinnar coming in.
One off.
Number 7.
That was close.
You were close. Very close, Corey. Yeah, it was right there. Liked it just a little bit better than you thought I would.
Just a wee bit.
Yeah, Chance of Sinnar also played recently. It just came out September, October-ish. If you don't remember, or you didn't listen to the episode, and aren't familiar with Chance of Sinnar, because it's probably maybe the deepest cut or one of the deeper cuts on the list here. Mm-hmm. But it is a puzzle game that's inspired by like the biblical Tower of Babel story, which is meant, it serves as kind of a parable for why like there are so many different languages in the world and so many people speaking, you know, it's all that kind of thing. And so it's a puzzle game where you are having to learn the languages of these people to traverse the environment. You wake up and you immediately run into somebody who's, you know, shouting something at you, and you just have to use context clues to figure it out. You have to be like, okay, he's pointing over here. He's gesturing toward this. There's this path over here. Maybe I can go, maybe it's this, maybe it's whatever. And that is much of the game, is you are having to effectively, like, it's a very interesting experience because like you don't have to 100% everything. Like, you don't have to learn this language in its entirety to beat this area. You can learn very little of the language and kind of luck into figuring out how to get through an area. There's usually at the end of, there are 5 like floors to this tower. And each of the like each of the, I guess, doors that's kind of separating, because in this world, like, each of the floors are separated from one another. It's meant to kind of like gate them off from other cultures. You know, there is this kind of puzzle that needs to be solved that requires some grasp of the language and also some other stuff that you found throughout that, of like this researcher who's been trying to figure out how to open this door, and you're gathering their notes that are helping kind of inform your decisions to like figure out how to get the door open. But it's this very, like, you don't have to complete everything to do that. You can just look into it, but it is a thing that's made, I think the game is made, like, especially as a writer, I think there is something that is really impressive about how they went about making these languages, because, like, in the game, there are, each floor is a different language, and each culture adapts their language kind of based on their usage. Like, you know, the first culture is more religious, so they have, like, even though they have some basic words in their, like, language, they're also using some religious terminology that isn't present in some of the other floors. You know, one of the other floors is militaristic, another floor is like really artistic, you know, they're using these terms that do kind of like really equate to what they are using them for, and figuring out also how to like connect those languages to figure out like how to bridge those gaps is very interesting as well. The game is really just like, the art style is really beautiful. It has kind of like a sable-ish kind of look to it. Like, that kind of art style, really, really pretty, really cool. And it is one of these things where, like, just, it reminded me the most, I think, of something like Return of the Oberdin. Which I also really loved, where it does have just this, it relies a lot on your ability to just observe and pull things in from the environment. You know, it isn't so much about like these chamber rooms where you are, even though I love games like Portal, those are very, it's very small, insular. Here's a puzzle, you solve this puzzle, you move on. With this, like, the entire floor is the puzzle. You are having to wander around and figure out, and like, maybe you go over here and you see these people having this conversation and you can't make heads or tails of it. You're talking to them and you cannot figure out a single word that they're saying, what it means, if it's even relevant to the entire thing. Like, sometimes they're just people who are standing around talking about nothing, and maybe it's kind of cluing you into something. But it isn't necessary. It isn't something that you have to figure out. And sometimes it's kind of hard to know. And you can wander up on these people and be really confused. And the game just wants you to move on. The game's just, you know, saying, you can't figure it out, go somewhere else. Because, I mean, they aren't a puzzle. They're just helping you kind of like piece everything together. They're helping you learn. They're helping you immerse. They're helping you kind of like get all of this stuff. And I think that that is like one of the hallmarks of this game, is just its ability to come in and just like be very hands off and just let you go and learn and figure things out as you can. And most of it you kind of have to do. You do have to just walk around, look, piece things together. And whenever you do pull it together, when you do sit down and you click in, like, this word definitely means this, and you lock it into the book in the game, and the game's like, yep, you got it. That's how they show something's plural, or that's how, like, they say the, or, you know, her, or, you know, whatever, they have these nouns and pronouns and, you know, prepositions and things, like, you know, yes, that is the way that they do it. It feels like revelatory, like you are legitimately learning a language, because you're like, gosh, yes, that clicked in, because it made sense that that is how they were saying something was plural, or that makes sense that, yeah, that's how they were like saying something was not something. And so, like, It's a game that is also kind of like longer than you would think, but also not like long. It's, you know, 10-ish hours. And does also have a little bit of like subversion a la, you know, I mentioned it at the time, but it's like Inscryption. Where it has like some subversive elements. It also does. And I think the overall narrative of it is, I think, pretty cool. And just kind of like seeing working to kind of like join these cultures together and kind of meld these languages, I think, is a super cool thing. And it does require a little bit of just like stepping back and being a legitimate observer and not like beating your head against it. And, you know, which you can. I mean, there's some stuff that you can just kind of like brute force your way through and guess and whatever. But it does really reward you for taking a beat and just like taking the world in and figuring out like who these people are, how they would be talking about this situation. And I think it's a really, really cool game.
Yeah, I'm honestly mad at myself and jealous. Also that you have played it. No, I've just heard so many wonderful things about this game, about Chance of Sinnar, and it's all been just glowing praise. And I mean, when you talked about it a couple weeks ago, it was just nothing but praise. And I was kicking myself really this week for not buying it and playing it. I have the demo downloaded, but I think it was, I think I told myself like 2 weeks ago, it was like, no new games. What we have played is what we have played this year. Let's just revisit a lot of the games we've played this year and just see where they fall. And so I committed to not picking it up. But I look forward to playing it in the near future and playing it soon. And I'm very excited to continue having the chant about Chance of Sinnar. And I love that it made your list.
Yeah.
And I am very excited for the future of it.
Yeah. Need more puzzle games like it. Because games like that, whenever I played with Return of the Obra Dinn for the first time, like that experience was also like revelatory, where I was just like, it's unreal. Like playing a puzzle game that like fires on all cylinders that way, like, is just, I don't know, my brain lights up with joy just having that experience. Chance of Sinnar really did hit just right this year, and I loved it.
Fun fact, I have not played Return of the Obra Dinn. I need to.
I was late to it. I played it, I only just played it a couple of years ago. But granted, it's not like a super old game, but no, it is very good. I mean, I would say like, I mean, not that it's necessarily a comparison between the two, but like, you know, I would say I prefer Return of the Obra Dinn even over Chance of Sinnar. Like, ooh. I think Return of the Obra Dinn is a phenomenally cool game to try and like suss out and figure out. And you know, even though it like seems a little weird on the outside, like the graphics styling, like I think that whole like 3D Game Boy kind of like graphic style is super cool. I think everything about it is just really, really dope. Too bad it didn't come out in 2023.
Too bad. I mean, we're going to talk about 2024 next week, obviously, and like what we're looking forward to, and I imagine what our gaming goals are and all that jazz. And I'll probably add it to the list because, spoiler, my goal next year is to kind of clean up a lot of my missing history in games. And so it might make the list for that. But we're not here to talk about 2024. We're here to talk about 2024. Moving on to number six. And to pull the same trick I just pulled on you previously, where I'm talking about a game you have already brought up. And for number six for me is Resident Evil 4
What
Remake. And I am excited to talk about this. And I'm really excited. I kind of just skimmed over you once, like you got to talking with it, because I knew I was going to be talking about it in, quite quickly. And so from here on, from six right now to one, at some point or another, each game I talk about was my number one game. For even for some of the briefest moments, for some of the later ones. RE4 Remake was, I would say, the first big hit that came out this year. And I'd never played Resident Evil 4. And I was very, very hesitant to play a Resident Evil game. As I've spoken many times on our show before, and for first-time listeners, I am not a spooky person gamer. But the more I saw on Resident Evil 4, because it was getting such glowing reviews, okay, let's watch some gameplay. And it was quite literally Leon Kennedy's absolute hilarity in the camp of it, of I'll see myself out, or bingo. Yep. And like all these just like stupid yet hilarious one-liners sold me on. I'm like, okay, let's check it out. It opens up in a horrifying fashion. It is immediately incredibly spooky and you are overrun with enemies. And I'm like, I might've gotten in too deep. This might be, I think I maybe have done myself in here. But quite quickly, the game itself kind of lets up on its survival horror, I would say pretty soon out the gate. And it just begins to ease you in area after area, kind of letting you continue to get your feet wet and like fail but succeed also to an extent. And all around from beginning to end, I just began having a phenomenal time playing as Leon Kennedy, from roundhousing my way through enemies to cutting them off at the knees to an incredible parry system. And I played it on easy, so I had supplies galore, so I never had an issue with that. But all it was just fun to play in a way that I think a lot of games this year are fun to play, but like it had a nostalgia to it with. Yeah. Because it is an older game we never played, and I know they've reworked a lot of the combat and how it moved and played and all around with that, but something about it was like that mid-2000s of how a lot of gaming was. And I adored it. I loved it. I've played through separate ways, absolutely. I wouldn't say was astounded by it, but it was it was great and wonderful to see, like, oh, there are more layers to the story. We knew we're there, but it was great to see them. And I just, so much of what it did and does, I think I also have to commend that so many other games have copied it and have effectively like found a way to use this like Resident Evil inventory management minigame effectively in so many of their games going forward, and like I wouldn't say like perfecting that, but like using that as a template and using this like third person over the shoulder as like a revolutionary mark in gaming. I think Leon is one of my favorite video game protagonists. I think he's just he's hilarious. He is just so done with it all, but it's just like I'm here. I'm like, someone needs to do it. It might as well be me, because I have to get out of here somehow. And that's just the vibe he brings so much. And he's just bringing levity and just like sarcasm to every situation. The cast of characters, and from what I know of the original, are even better this time around. They've, like you said, sanded off the rougher edges and made it far more, I would say, applicable to the modern audience. And I think a lot of those changes are good, specifically concerning the character Ashley. It's just what a freaking game Resident Evil 4 Remake is, from just beginning to end. It's a pretty tight 15 to 17 hours, I would say. If you're not like achievement hunting and like backtracking through some areas to get some certain things. It's pretty quick. And from what I understand, it's replay values through the roof. I've yet to replay it yet, though I do want to. It's because from what I understand, when you replay it, like the time is cut in half because it cuts out a lot of, you don't have to like work your way back through a lot of areas. You should just be able to like go forward through a lot of areas. But yeah, RE4 remake. I mean, you talked about it. We can talk about it for hours. It's just a masterpiece. And I loved it and I will continue loving it.
It really is such a good game. And I love the fact that I just love the fact that Capcom is doing that with their entire series, basically. They are just really going hard to kind of make these games, if nothing else, just modernize them so that a new audience can find them again. Mm-hmm. Because they're doing a great job. And I think it's a huge part of why I'm kind of into Resident Evil now.
Yeah.
I think it's super cool. I can't wait to see what they continue to do in the future, but Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil 4, fed into my really enjoying Resident Evil 8. You can see a lot of that DNA kind of pulling over and stuff. And it's such a good game, and I love Capcom's firing on all cylinders.
Yes.
Street Fighter 6, killing it, coming out with Monster Hunter Wilds. They're doing it.
Dragon's Dogma 2 in March.
Yeah, look at them. They're getting it, Capcom.
They are arguably the best AAA studio at the moment. Either them or Insomniac. I would probably give Capcom that, though. It is quite... They don't miss. They haven't missed in almost 8 years now.
Yeah.
It is just bangers all the time. Yeah. As Kendall Roy would say, bangers all the time, bangers.
You've been watching a lot of Succession, Corey?
We watched it this year, and it just has a lot of... a lot of just very quotable moments, some that are just far too profane for me to utter.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very memorable. And the Tom Wambsgans thing was earlier was because it was it was the dark horse, but he's also the only player to ever do an unassisted triple play in a game too.
Yeah.
And so that's also just a wild stat. And so Street Fighter 6 is our Tom Wambsgans. So that's all. That might be the end of the Succession quotes. It might not be.
Yeah.
Who knows? That.
It'll come up. Logan Roy. He might have a appearance later. Just so people know, my number two, spoiler alert, is Succession.
No, by the way, guys, it's not even a game. It's just...
It's just that good. Just that. The playing the my emotions watching that show is the game. Corey, do you know what my number six is?
No, I don't. I quite frankly have no clue.
What do you think? Take a guess.
Final Fantasy 16.
I could see why you would think that, but no.
No, see? I don't know.
It is Spider-Man 2, Corey.
Wow.
Spider-Man 2 is my number six.
Nice.
Spider-Man 2 probably had the biggest ping pong on my list, I think, because legitimately, it's and there are a couple of games on my list that are like this, where it's I feel like there were some low points with Spider-Man 2. We talked about it not too long ago, but Spider-Man 2 is the nature of its narrative arc is just kind of like it. It feels like it's rushing you along in spots that the original Spider-Man or Miles Morales didn't. And it feels like you're kind of like flying through the story at a clip that like felt a little like rushed in spots. And also like Peter's whole black suit Spider-Man arc is not necessarily like the most like fill me with warm and fuzzies kind of thing. Like he becomes a jerk for a lot of the game. Like that's not always fun. And there's just like some of that stuff, like the bigger narrative kind of things that are happening in some spots of the story did kind of bring down the experience for me. But I think it's one of the things where like Spider-Man 2 feels so good as a game to play and be a part of at every given moment that even whenever the story is not like quite on it the way that like we might wish that it would be, it's still like there are few games that just feel this fun to play. Everything from like the traversal, like swinging around, never gets old. They add a wingsuit. Now you can fly around if you want. If you get bored with it, you can do that. If you get bored with the whole thing, just fast travel to any street corner. It'll only take you half a second.
At most.
Yeah. If you're kind of done with Peter Parker's whole like, you know, kind of Venom suit abilities and his tech, switch over to Miles Morales. He's got his whole thing. He plays pretty differently in a lot of respects. Yep. Like, you know, there's a lot of variance where it is like you can do a lot of different things and have a lot of fun in a lot of different ways. And everything from like the side activities, I feel like were really solid and streamlined. I felt like there were like some really smart, poignant, like small, easily missable, like side missions that you could do, especially as Miles. Like he had a lot of like really thoughtful little sub stories that you could have that were really sweet. And I think it was just a thing where like overall, like, you know, when looking at my list, there were times where it was like, oh, it's higher. Oh, it's lower. But it was a thing where like, regardless, Spider-Man 2 had to be on it in some capacity. Cause it's like, there are a few games that are doing, you know, like where Jusant, for example, Jusant, you know, doing climbing better than any game. Like there's no other open world game that feels as fun to just inhabit as Insomniac Spider-Man. And so like, even regardless, even though like I got to the end of Spider-Man 2 and I was like, okay, like I still feel like I prefer the narrative of like the other Spider-Man games better. It's still just the best playing one of these, which is a phenomenal experience regardless. So had a blast, loved it a lot. Obviously there's going to be a Spider-Man 3. So very excited for whenever that comes out.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Spider-Man 2. It's just fantastic to play. To like harp on that, it never feels not filled with joy, other than when you are like using the symbiote suit. But all around, like the swinging, the fighting, the combat, even like the Venom suit abilities or the symbiote suit, black suit abilities, all of it just is done with so much care, so much focus. Just like you said, it is probably the funnest open world to inhabit and one of the funnest games to play. It is outstanding in that regard. I think it does fall flat in some of the narrative points. It feels rushed because I personally just think it's too short. The first game's like 20 hours, this one's like 12 at most, with like so many more characters in there. I just think it needed more. A little bit more runtime. I don't know if it needed 20 hours, but I think they could have just stretched it out a bit more. But yeah, I love that. It's a phenomenal game.
Yeah. I think we, just to not mislead people, Corey, Spider-Man 2, main story 17 hours. Spider-Man 1, main story, 17 hours.
Personally, so, I finished main story of 1 at like 20. Granted, I think I did a lot more before I finished up. But I did a lot in 2, and I wrapped at 12 hour mark. Just
goodness, Corey.
Just speaking to my personal experience, I was just like stunned by how quick
you you rushed it. That's like speed running right there, Corey.
Well, I think there. I mean, let's get into Spider-Man 2 just for a brief, another minute or two, I guess. I think the side objectives in 1 take significantly longer. The like base camp shoot, effectively like fight, like clear out are often so much more just in depth, vertical, like, whether that be in a space-wise or enemy-wise, I feel like there's just infinitely more, and those are more difficult, so they just take more time. And while in Spider-Man 2, they're much smaller in scale, and I feel like a lot of those are over pretty quickly, and a lot of its mini-games are like get in, get out, compared to ones which were a lot just more going on. So that could have been why I think 1 took a little bit longer. Then 2 is just they hadn't refined that experience yet. And they nailed it in this one, but like everything, like you said, it's just feels like it's going too quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I got you. Well, Corey, I get it. Yeah. Spider-Man 2, I mean, is Spider-Man 2 higher up on your list, Corey?
I
enjoy your conversations about that later.
I guess light spoilers new. It did not make my list. I will talk about it a bit more in honorable mentions. It was awfully close.
Okay.
But a bit spoilers for ahead. It did not make my list. So I'll leave it there. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Didn't make the list.
Love it. To find out what's on Corey's list, listen next week, because this is the end of part one. Next week, top 5, everybody, get ready for it. There will probably be less variance, but still some. Yeah. Guarantee you that. Mm-hmm. There might be some words. There might be some fists. Who knows? Things get hot here at the end. Corey, let's look forward to that. We don't have to wrap this up the way that we normally do, because there's another part to this. So everybody, strap in if you want to know what's coming up. Corey, until then, this has been Arcade Cozy, Life Sectic. Why should your hobbies
be too?